although I'll not free the senor, Mary ever.
Welcome to the first Recruits Habs 365 podcast. We'll be doing a lot of them. I can't tell you exactly how many because it revolves around you and us, of course. But when there's news, we're definitely going to be there. That's why we called it Habs 365. Our first one promises to be a great one, right off the hop. The head scout of recruits, Grant McCagg, will be a regular on the podcast, and we'll bring in guests often too. Depends on the day, depends on the news, depends on the city that we're in. If we're in New York City, you'll probably get a chance to hear from Daniel Friedman, who's a good friend of mine that works with the New York Islanders. Or it might even be we'll find someone else in the media that day that works regularly in New York City. I've made a lot of contacts over the 32 years in doing this business, and we're going to make sure that we find these people and talk about their specific teams as we travel along the way. And there might be a lot of travel. And again, that depends on you. The more support we get, the more we're going to throw it right back at you. In fact, we've already decided that Grant McCagg will be heading to Toronto for the Habs rookie camp. And if we keep getting subscriptions, and we're very modest about our goals here, and we'll be turning that money that we get over to you very quickly. If we keep getting subscriptions, we'll be there on the 7th of October in Washington, D.C. And we'll be there on the 8th of October in New York City at Madison Square Gardens, providing for you the absolute best coverage that we can. That's our goal, and we want you to join us. So join us now for Habs 365 Podcast, the very first one. Grant McCagg, the head scout at Recruits, will be our first guest. We'll talk a little bit after that about the Andrei Markov situation. I'll have a little rant on, was that a bad day for the Montreal Canadiens, Marc Bergevin? Everybody seems to think it was. And there's a thought there that it was awful, but there's a presumption that goes along with it being awful. And a presumption that no one has really considered, and I will consider that. And then we'll follow that segment with Eric Engels of Sportsnet. Eric and I go way back, way, way back when I helped him break into this business, when I worked with CTV. Eric this year is going to be very kind to me, I think, and return that. And I appreciate it because Eric has become a powerful voice in the Montreal Canadiens media. He's got more contacts in his phone than many, many. And then we'll wrap it up, our very first podcast, by looking ahead to the year and what this first season will be and what it is going to be bringing to you on Habs 365 and also with Grant McCagg's draft coverage as well. It's a lot that Grant knows that you don't know. And one of the reasons that I picked him and he picked me as a partnership that was going to work was that I know what Grant can bring. I know the contacts in his phone. I know the head scouts he knows. I know the general managers that he knows. It's formidable, and you'll discover him throughout this year, and you're going to appreciate what he can bring. You already know me. I'm Brian Wild, and I thank you for coming along for the very first Habs 365 podcast. It's going to be one of about 100, I presume, and I think you're going to enjoy them. We're back next with the head scout of recruits, Grant McCagg. Back at Habs 365, the very first edition of the Recruits podcast. And of course, when you're starting your first podcast of Habs 365, you have to have your very first guest as the guy who founded the website and is the head scout at Recruits, Mr. Grant McCagg. And Grant joins us now, and it's going to be an interesting season, Grant, of course. And not only for us, but the Montreal Canadiens and the next draft. And we're all very excited about the proposition in front of us. Let's talk about that first. And the brainchild that was yours not too long ago that's expanded into this right here. What's your feeling? Proud? Anxious?
Well, I am anxious, that's for sure. Yeah, you know, of course, I'm proud that we've gotten to this point that, you know, I was able to make one of the top free agent acquisitions of the summer in getting you, of course. And I think, I mean, I feel fortunate that I was able to do that. And I really believe that we're going to make an awesome tandem.
Yeah, so do I. Absolutely. I'm excited about it. Now, one of the aspects that I'm going to be doing more is the Habs, of course, and the aspect that you're going to be doing more with some crossover is the draft. And the Montreal Canadiens just finished a very, very good one. How would you rank the draft, even though it's obviously extremely early and difficult to say at such an early moment? But we got to look at the summer showcase, and wow, there were two standouts already for the Canadiens.
Yeah, I certainly, I mean, when I did my draft review after, you know, the grades of each of the teams, Montreal actually graded out as well as anybody, in particular because there were several players who I had that the Habs picked that I had a lot higher, you know, like Josh Brook, for instance, I had as at the end of the first round, and he ended up going to the Habs at 56. And then Ekinen, I had ranked 35th overall, and they also got him at the end of the second round. Walford and the other Fleury, the other two defensemen that they got in the third and fourth rounds, I also had ranked in the second round. So, I mean, those were in particular were four solid picks that I thought were all at, you know, at the very least top 60, top 55 guys, and the Habs managed to get all of them. So I thought there was not only quality, but depth as well. And they answered, you know, they answered question marks that they had as far as depth goes at center and defense. And those were the two things, you know, that going into the draft that I think they really wanted to target. And guys felt to them that they really liked, and they got, and I liked. So as far as I was concerned, I think this was their best draft overall since, you know, the Max Pacioretty, Ryan McDonagh draft. So I think it's going to really pay dividends. We'll see it, you know, in the next 5 years.
The guy you didn't mention was their first rounder, who also fell a good maybe 10 numbers into their lap, too, in Paling. And you saw him at the summer showcase, and he was impressing everyone. And I know you talked to some scouts, too, about how much he impressed.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that goes without saying that Paling was a solid pick. You know, they needed a center, a big center that has top two potential. And I think he, you know, he really, really showcased, pardon the pun, his talent at the summer showcase. He was... He was quite possibly the most impressive center at that event. And, you know, with a lot of 19-year-olds competing, I know in talking to scouts after, they were just really, really impressed with his two-way game. He, for me, he looked better than Logan Brown did. And I think his coach at St. Cloud is also the coach of the World Junior team. And then the way that he played, I really think that he's a lock to play in the World Juniors this year. You know, the year after you're drafted to make the U.S. team is not an easy, chore. And he did it quite easily, I thought.
How important is it when a guy is that young, if he's able to show that much? You know, a lot of people don't understand the difference between what a guy can do at 20 and what a guy can do at 19 and what a guy can do at 18. For instance, Paling was the youngest player in the NCAAs last year doing what he was doing and being a first rounder. And I think the general fan has no, like when you just mentioned Logan Brown, for example, and what he looked like at his age compared to Paling at his age, that says a lot. And I don't think people factor that in.
No, that's a good point. I think, you know, a nice comparable is Michael McCarron, who was picked 25th overall as well. You know, big U.S. Forward that his camp, he got cut in the first cuts at the camp, the U.S. camp that summer after he was drafted. And, you know, and Paling didn't get cut, but he was arguably the best the best centerman on the team, you know, as a, as an 18-year-old. So I think that only bodes well for his future. And I think, you know, it helped that he played NCAA in what's considered to be the top division in, you know, in college hockey as a 17-year-old, which is rare. I think it's only going to help his development. He'll be ahead of the curve of other guys when he's 20 years old. He may be ready for the NHL when he's 20 years old. He already plays such a smart, mature game. His skating was what impressed me more than anything. I knew he was a decent skater, but I thought at that camp he really showed that he could more than keep up with the best, you know, the best juniors in the world. And for me, I think one more year of junior, it's good, or sorry, one more year of college, it's going to be similar to Max Pacioretty, I think, who played, you know, 1 year of college after he was drafted. Well, I think that's probably going to be the case for Palin, that he'll 1 year of one more year of college, maybe a half year or a year in the A, and I think he'll be ready to step in the lineup.
Why do you think he dropped down? I mean, it's so hard to know. I mean, you know, he was projected, I think, somewhere as high as 11 or 12. Maybe I think I read a scout that had him as high as that. It's hard to know. I mean, it's a crapshoot, I know, but there are always theories why a guy dropped. And I mean, he obviously fell into the Habs lap, and it looks like they absolutely stole one here. But why did he? What were the factors?
I mean, there's always guys that it only takes one guy on the team's list, you know, to like more that for a guy to drop. I mean, Vesalainen was the same deal. Lots of teams had him top 15. I think, you know, most expected Paling to go 15 to 20. So for him to go 25 is, you know, I mean, it was unexpected, but every year it happens because, you know, a team will have a guy, you know, he'll be the second guy on about eight teams' lists, you know, between 15 and 25. And it just happens that, you know, the guy they had number one goes ahead of him. But I think why he ended up going to 25 was he ended up being the third line center on that U.S. team at the under 18s. And because of that, he didn't quite, you know, get to, he was asked to play a defensive role. So people, you know, all the scouts, that's when, you know, they get to see these guys the most. Then they think, well, maybe he's only going to be a third line center, you know. When I say only, I mean, that's still great, but, you know, they think, well, maybe Norris has more upside. He got more points. He got to play with the better guys. Maybe the guy that ended up being slotted in as a second center, why wasn't it Paling? Well, that's the role he was asked to play. You know, he wasn't with the under 18 team all year. So the coaches, as a rule, when a new guy comes in, they don't, you know, they don't give him a high enough up role. He doesn't play as much because the coach doesn't know him as much. So, but I think that was why he dropped, because of, you know, he ended up being asked to play a third line role at the under 18s, but he more than proved. I mean, he looked a lot better than Norris at the summer showcase when the roles were reversed, and the coach knows him more than he knows Norris, right? He ends up giving Paling the top two center line because he knows him, you know, unlike it the way it was with the under 18 coach, who knew Norris better. Well, Paling, when he got the top two role, you know, in the summer showcase there along with Brown, he, you know, as far as I was concerned, was even better than Brown and was the best centerman on the U.S. team. So that, you know, that I think the scouts are saying, oh, okay, well, that question mark that we had whether he could have top six upside has been answered. And I mean, he already has a defensive game. He's solid defensively. So I think if you were to, you know, scouts after seeing the summer showcase, if they would have had a chance to redraft, would have said, I like him more than Norris. He should probably be top 15. So, you know, I think that only bodes well for the Habs in the future. I really think they got a bona fide number two center prospect in Palin.
I'm Brian Wild, along with Grant McKay. This is Habs 365, our first podcast. And one of the advantages of talking to Grant is he has a different skill set than me. I'm more of a Habs guy, and I've been watching the Canadian to the NHL level for a long, long time. And Grant's the guy that knows these players when they, I don't know, what's the first age you would say you start to know these guys? 14, 15? What is that first age? When would you say you first start to look at a guy and he gets in your sights?
Well, I'd say as soon as they play junior hockey or that level. I think 16.
You ever see a guy at Major Midget or anything like that?
No,
out and you're already looking at him.
No, each year I cover the draft, so it's really the draft eligible guys each year. So I don't really dissect their game until they're 17, to be honest with you.
Right.
And
well, it's a big advantage for me, for sure, because I don't dissect their game until they're pretty close to the NHL, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I certainly, for instance, haven't seen Noah Juulsen very much, and I got to think that you have a lot more. The last time I saw him was at the World Junior Championships here in Montreal, and he played pretty well. But you're the guy to ask. You're the guy who's watched him way back when he was draft eligible in the Western Hockey League. So what do you think of Noah Juulsen's development, and how far is he, Grant, away from making the National Hockey League if he had to pick a time now?
Well, certainly I loved him in his draft year. He ended up having really solid offensive numbers that he hasn't really built on in his last 2 years. And I think part of it was, situation where the team maybe wasn't as good offensively, and he was asked to play more of a shutdown role. So I'm maybe not as sure as I thought. Maybe he was a little bit more of an offensive guy than what he's turned out to be. But certainly, I still think that there's top three potential with him. He's got a great shot. He can move the puck. He's smart. So he'll be able to play at the very least on a second power play unit, I think, with time. Biggest thing with Juulsen is he still needs to put on a bit of weight, I think, before he's ready to play in the NHL. So I'm thinking one full season in the AHL and show that. And a good summer where he puts on another 5 pounds. I assume that he's put on 5 pounds of lean muscle this summer, and I believe that next training camp, not this one, he'll be I don't think they're expecting him to make the team in training camp. I mean, they have 9 or 10 guys that are going to vie for those 7-8 spots. And I don't know that Juulsen's one of them, but that can always change. I mean, he's certainly capable of stepping up in training camp and impressing enough, just like Sergachev did last year, to get a look at the start of the season. But, they have quite a few one-way or contracts, and I believe that, the grand design for him is to give him a year of AHL experience and hope that he can put on a little more weight and be ready for, because he plays a very physical, a very aggressive defensive game. And to be able to do that, I mean, you can get away with it in junior, but to be able to do it at the NHL level, I believe he'll need to be a bit stronger and get over the 200-pound mark. And then, then he's ready to step in. Probably a bottom pairing, I would suspect, to start in the NHL. And I think he's a top four guy with time. It might take him a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, but a 3 or 4 defenseman is what Trevor Timmons has told me whenever I've asked him. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people lose sight of how much patience you have to have with a defenseman. It's not like a forward who, especially a winger, and you say just go up and down the wing and try to put the puck in the net, and get the guy at the point. It's not genius stuff there, but there's a lot of things to learn for a defenseman, and that's why you're seeing that they're aging and the forwards are getting younger and finding their gap is changing. When you're actually useful in the NHL. So people have to be patient here with Noah Juulsen. He's going to be somebody, but don't expect it in the next 2-3 months. One guy, Grant, that you have definitely seen a lot of, and you've got Twitter in a Twitter a little bit, talking about Jonathan Drouin, because you see him, because of how much you've seen him, that he has center potential. And it's interesting because the funny thing about social media is, I find, is that there are narratives. And there are a lot of people that set the narrative, and then there are a thousand times more than those people that will follow the narrative. So the narrative is that Alex Galchenyuk is going to be the number one center of the Montreal Canadiens come October. And if he isn't, then apparently the world is going to collapse. But if it's not Alex Galchenyuk, it should be, could be, and probably the most qualified is Jonathan Drouin, if you're looking for something that's different than the 40 points that Philip Deneau can bring. Now, tell me just a little bit, because I know it already. I read your article on it, on recruits, about what he did in his last year in juniors. Because you know what? I don't think anybody has a sense of it. I mean, that was a fact out there. You did the homework on it. And I don't think anybody had any idea that he had done that much in the C position as a junior and made someone out of a young Winnipeg Jet player who I absolutely love. In Nick Ehlers. So tell everybody what Jonathan Drouin did, because I don't think anybody knows.
Well, I mean, they weren't expected to do much because, you know, the number one overall pick, McKinnon, their first line center, made Colorado, you know, right off the bat. And, you know, Ducharme had to find another number one center. And he said, well, you know, Jonathan, can you... you know, can you fill the void and put him in the spot? And I mean, all he ended up doing was getting 108 points in 46 games, which is, you know, I mean, how many juniors get more than 2 points a game these days? It's rare. And 79 assists in 46 games. I mean, he was asked to become you know, the setup guy on a Halifax team that wasn't expected to. You know, to do well at all, and came within a goal of beating Baldor and Anthony Mantha and that powerhouse in the playoffs in the third round. They did that. They, you know, there's a darn good chance that they would have won the Q once again, and that's with Jonathan Drouin as their first line center. And don't forget, that was as an 18-year-old. So I mean. He potentially, imagine if he would have gone back to junior as a 19-year-old playing center. I mean, you know, the numbers may have been 3 points a game. In the playoffs, 16 games, he had 41 points. I mean, he was...
Wow.
He was just phenomenal.
Holy moly. In the playoffs, against the better team.
Well, exactly. I mean,
wow.
I don't think I've seen a better... I mean, he... Two straight years he played, you know, I mean, I... The closest team for me, living in Chavo at the time, was Gatineau, Hull. I mean, 40 minutes away. And I saw all of his, he played against Gatineau those last two playoffs years. And I have not seen a better junior performance from a player in my 11 years that I've been scouting regular, you know, going to the games regularly. And it just, I mean, it just made your jaw drop at how much talent, you know, how he ran the power plays, and he's going to do the same thing in Montreal. You know, I mean, it's such a key. Weber's going to be set up beautifully, you know, so many times for that huge launch from the point. I mean, there's just so much potential there for the Habs on the power play alone. I see the puck distribution skills entering the zone with the. He's so good carrying the puck and so hard to get it from him that, you know, I think he can really drive the play as a centerman. He loves using the whole ice. He has great hockey sense and vision. And, he, you know, I mean, if you put him on a line with Lehkonen and Pacioretty, as I have surmised, I really think those two guys are very good defensively. You know, they can help him out. They can help him out, just like Darnay used to get helped out, you know, when he was centerman, and as he adjusts to the NHL level as a centerman, I really think that's what the Habs' plan is. You know, the more I thought about it, well, people saying, well, they didn't get a first line center. Well, no one asked Marc Bergevin that, you know. And I really think, obviously, they didn't come out and say it because they don't want to put all this pressure on them,
right?
You know? But as we discovered, you know, the last couple of days, your friend Chris Veal, I think his name is.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He let us know that he happened to see some training sessions where who was at center on Max's on Max's line in these scrimmages is Drouin. And that he looked really good. So,
and people have told us
your question.
Yeah, people have suggested we hold our horses on that. It's a little bit early, but the truth is, I've seen a lot of moments in August where the players are taking things seriously and they want to get a head start on things, and so they put themselves in the positions that are going to eventually be their positions. I don't believe this is an accident for a moment. I believe 100%, because I've seen it in my 32 years happen a lot, where they phone each other and say, hey, this is the plan. Why don't we start executing that plan? Start getting familiar with each other, comfortable with each other. So skating basically every day for a couple of weeks. First of all, they should be commended for caring that much in the middle of August. And secondly, yeah, it's because that's what's going to eventually happen. That's why they're doing it now.
Yeah,
so exactly. I agree with Chris Veal when he saw what he saw, and that they're actually looking very, very good together. And Chris, by the way, I've known him for a very long time. It's not someone I don't know from Twitter who's, you know, I'm just taking his word for. I've known Chris from the Monkland Tennis Club for over a decade. We're good friends. So when he says something, I know it's to be truth. He doesn't lie. He doesn't tell me stories. All right. One final thought, Grant, please.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this with Eric Engels, too, who's going to be another guest coming up on Habs 365. You are asked right now, while you consider everything, and it's a hard question because Marc Bergevin has $8.5 million to spend, and he hasn't spent it yet. Let's say he doesn't spend it. The Montreal Canadiens had 103 points last year. I have already thought this through. I believe that they will get 96 or 97 points, because I don't feel as if they have replaced adequately Andre Markov. Even though they have new defensemen, I don't think his skill set has been found. So I've dropped them down 6 points. If that money's not spent, where do you have them? How many points do you see the Montreal Canadiens finishing with in a mid-August prediction, which is entirely unfair?
Well, yeah, because I don't really like to make point predictions. You never know what's going to happen. But if they don't
give
make
me a
any
ballpark.
Moves,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I really think, you know, I'm going to give it a little explanation before I.
Of course.
Okay. A full year with Julian at training camp, I think, is really going to, really going to help the team. I like him better as a coach than Therrien. And Therrien had them on a pace probably to get 100 points at least last year, as it was. I think Alzner's been underrated. I really think that they're going to play a more defensive, like a lot of Claude Julien likes to win 2-1 games. He likes defensemen that aren't, you know, real fancy, that get the puck out, that don't necessarily have a lot of flash and dash, but don't make a lot of mistakes, get the puck out of the zone, let the forwards do the legwork as far as offense goes, and on the power play, Weber do his thing. I think healthy Carey Price coming back, I only think he's going to be maybe even better than he was last year. I think the team will get 100 points again this season and win the division once again. And that's even if they don't make a move on defense. But past history has shown, I don't believe there's been a GM that's made more moves, especially for defensemen, in the last 5 years during the season. I believe Bergevin, I was looking at it, and I think he's picked up 10 defensemen. in the past 5 years during the season. So
yeah. The odds, I get a kick out of people that say he's that he's afraid to make the big move. Sorry, Weber for Subban, and you want to say he's afraid?
Okay. Well, I mean, he got got Petrie too as well, and I mean, at Alzner, he's going to be one of the top four defensemen. I mean, he's made, three of the top four defensemen are going to be guys he picked up, or four, or all four, guys that he's picked up in the last 3 years. So certainly he's not afraid to make the move. And if they aren't on pace to get 100 points at come January or so, he'll make the move earlier than the trade deadline. I don't think that he's going to sit back and, looks like they're not going to make the playoffs and not make a move. So, there'll be a move made if they're not on pace for 100 points, and it will help the team because there are some assets. I really think the Habs prospect pool is a little underrated after this past draft they just had. And there are assets of other teams, are going to like, and even once on the team, like, he can dangle some decent talent to pick up that top four defenseman if the guys aren't panning out. So I think it'll be another 100 to 105 point season, and I think they'll be battling Tampa and not Toronto, as you seem to have speculated, for the division crown.
Fair enough, Grant. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. That's Grant McKagg, the head scout of recruits.ca. Still coming up on Habs 365, Andre Markov, what happened there, and who's to blame as well. Eric Engels of Sportsnet joins us. That's next on Habs 365. Could make me. Welcome back to the Habs 365 podcast. It was great to hear from Grant McKagg. I think he's going to bring a lot of insight. And, it's really surprising that Grant's been around a very long time, and I don't think people have an understanding of the depth of hockey knowledge he has. And when I got to know him through the months on Twitter, it was really even a revelation to me to just talk to him. I'm really looking forward to you getting a chance this year to discover how much he knows about the game, because he's one of those guys that I can learn from every day, and I think you will too. You know, one of the things that struck me this offseason is how much heat that Marc Bergevin has been taking. And now, admittedly, it's 5 years in, and the Montreal Canadiens still don't have a number one centerman, or at least one that we know of. Jonathan Drouin seems to be the hope this week that he could be that guy. But before that, it was Alex Galchenyuk. And Saku Koivu took the role for a little while, but he was always a number two. It's been since Pierre Turgeon, 1997, the last true number one C. One would maybe like to argue that it was Vincent Danfous in 1998 and 1999, but Danfous in those last 2 years here, he didn't provide much offense, and certainly his better days were behind him. So even though Marc Bergevin is taking a lot of heat for the last 5 years, well, there were another 15 years before that that no one seemed able to get a number one center. One of the reasons is, of course, there aren't 30 in the game. There are about 20 number one centers. So Bergevin has failed in that capacity. Definitely he has. But there are 10 others that are failing all the time in the NHL at the same capacity. It is, as he says, sounds like an excuse, but it is not easy. They do not give them away. But this segment isn't actually about the number one C issue that the Montreal Canadiens have. Instead, it's what happened to Andre Markov this offseason. Because, again, we have a... a set of facts that people are sticking to here, that they think that they know the truth on it. And the essence is that we do not actually know the truth on this. Now, when we learned that Andre Markov said to the media when he held that impromptu press conference, which I must say is a little unusual for the team to grant a press conference for a player that is no longer your player and is going to be moving on to the KHL the next day, but the Canadians did that. I thought that was generous. So in it, we learned that Markov said to the Canadians that he would accept 1 year. Now, right away, all of the people that enjoy bashing, and I was included there, I didn't really understand it either, that with a one-year deal, how come they didn't get it done? But here's the thing that we don't know, and I said this a little bit on Walk of the Wild Side, and I want to expand on it here, that if the offer for Andre Markov by the Montreal Canadiens was 4.5 or 4, but not in the category of 5.75 million for that 1 year. Well, we have every right in that moment to not understand the thinking of Marc Bergevin and the Montreal Canadiens organization. However, let's say that Andre Markov wanted to hit a different style of pay dirt than he had in his entire career. Let's say that $5.75 million, who we presume is the asking price, was something like $7.5 million, $8.5 million. Well, then suddenly the tables are turned. We, like I like to say, need to flip the coin over because that would be a ridiculous amount of money to ask. So was it 4.5? Was it 7.5? It can't have been 5.75, can it? Can it have been the same figure that they agreed to for essentially what seems like 5 to 10 years for Andre Markov in a Canadian uniform? Could they not have come to the exact same figure that they always came to? It seems hard to believe, after making a relationship together for that long at that price, that somehow that price at the age of 38 was suddenly now not good enough. So what I'm trying to say here is, if you look at it logically, one of the two parties moved from 5.75. Which party was it? Did the Montreal Canadiens suddenly look at Andre Markov after all of these years and say, you know, you had a great year last year. You're 38. You're old. But you know what? You had a good playoff. You had a great year. You had a great playoff. You didn't regress. Your game didn't degrade. Why would 5.75 turn to 4.5 or 4 or even 5 or something that insulted Andre Markov so much so that he announced that he was finished with the Montreal Canadiens? All right, let's flip the coin over. I've just given you the Montreal Canadiens side, haven't I? Let's give you the Andre Markov side and his agent, Andre Markov. So what was going on in his mind? Now, naturally, he would be insulted with 4.5. 5.75 is what he always asked for. You would think that would be what the Canadians would give. So did he ask for 7.5? Did he say, listen, if this is only 1 year, I've got to hit pay dirt here. I got to make a lot more. What was the offer from the KHL? That would tell us. If suddenly we learned that in the KHL at AK Boskazan, he was making 7.5, then that would be a different story. We would say, okay, this maybe was about money. Well, that hasn't leaked out of Russia yet. So we may never know exactly what that figure is. But I can't buy 5.75 wasn't offered by the Montreal Canadiens. I can't buy that they suddenly turned into a 4 or a 4.5 for a player that didn't degrade. The bottom line here is they didn't come to an agreement when they had always come to, in the past, an agreement. What happened there? We won't ever know. So when I say to myself, I can't know that unless I hear what the two offers were. I cannot know that. And if I can't know something, can I have a pitchfork out for Marc Bergevin? No.
I don't know what his offer was. No pitchforks. Can I have a pitchfork out for Andrei Markov for abandoning the Montreal Canadiens, for saying, I don't like your offer. Your offer's no good. Goodbye. I am done with you. And as I said before, when someone says, personally, I am done with you, I reject you, there are no jerseys hanging from the rafters or press conferences thanking someone. That person has rejected you, said no to you. So what you get is what you saw, a gracious allowing them to use their facilities so we could have a teleconference over those phones. I didn't think that was a terrible gesture. That was a pretty nice gesture. I mean, they did tell him. I mean, Markov did say, I'm finished with you, but let's do a press conference anyway. Anyway, back to the bottom line here. We don't know. So no pitchforks for Bergevin, please. Come on. You don't know what the offer was. You don't know if he insulted Markov, if he actually gave Markov a raise even that wasn't good enough, or he offered the same price that he has. My feeling is he offered the same price that he's always offered Markov. Why switch? And it wasn't good enough. So no pitchforks for Markov either, because, again, we don't know the price. We don't know if he got greedy. We don't know if Bergevin got cheap. So if you don't know, you got to let it go. You got to realize sometimes in this business, when it comes right down to it, you're not going to learn the dollar figure of a contract that never got signed. It's never going to register with the NHL. It's never going to be in your salary cap scale. You can never go to cap friendly and see what it was going to cost. You just never know. And if you never know, you got to put the pitchforks away. Eric Engels is up next from Sportsnet on Habs 365. On the Habs 365 podcast with Eric Engels of Sportsnet. And it's been an interesting summer, Eric, for sure. And everybody's asking that question that's on everyone's mind all the time in August. And that is, are the Montreal Canadiens better this year than last year? And I think there are two big differences that answer our question. Radulov for Drouin, Markov for anyone?
Yeah, well, I would say that they're worse right now, but they have the potential to be better depending on how that $8.5 million gets spent. But that said, you know, like, can you really pick out two players or even one player in the NHL that makes them dramatically better or turns them into a contender for the Stanley Cup with that $8.5 spent? I don't think that you can, barring that they pull off an absolute miracle, they throw the Hail Mary and end up with John Tavares, because that's the only name for me. You could look around the NHL, you could look at Matt Duchene, you could look at Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Yes, those players would potentially make them better, but turn them into a contender, I think John Tavares is the one guy. And you know, we're talking and dreaming in technicolor about a player like that, because what it takes to acquire a player like that is one thing. And you got to think that Garth Snow, who has a great relationship with John Tavares, the Islanders GM, is going to do everything possible before giving up on that concept. But right now, it doesn't look like those two sides are coming together on a deal before the season starts, and that's a very scary prospect for New York.
Yeah, and that means that perhaps this comes to fruition a little later in the year, and they have to make sure that they're in the playoff picture and the picture overall, and then find out what happens at the trading deadline to the New York Islanders. But will the fan base, will you, will everyone have a sense of patience that it could take that long?
Yeah, well, me, I personally just want to see what unfolds. My buddy Chris Johnson at Sportsnet always says, embrace the chaos. And I think that's the best kind of methodology as a media member, is you pray for chaos. You don't want a monotone. You don't want the same thing happening. You know, I remember, and you would say the same thing, Brian, like last year we covered a 9-0-1 streak to begin the season, I think, you know, if I'm not butchering the numbers here. It was boring by the end of it. We were saying the same things over and over again. The same way when they lose 10 games in a row, it's boring. So I hope for kind of a chaotic situation. I'll say this about the Tavares friend, okay? And some Canadiens fans may vehemently disagree with me on this, so I'm happy to say it. If you were Marc Bergevin and the opportunity was there to get a guy like John Tavares, if I were Mark Bergevin, the limits to that package, there would be no limits to the package that I would offer. If Garth Snow turned to me and said, I want two first-round picks, I want Galchenyuk, and I want Pacioretty, I would say, no problem. Here you go.
No, because, come on. Not Pacioretty.
No, I would.
I'll take the two first.
I would.
I'll take the Galchenyuk.
I would, and I'll tell you why. Because it doesn't matter what you give up in that deal. What you get in that deal is a franchise player. And when you have one at center, when you have one on defense at Shea Weber, when you have one in Carey Price, and obviously Jonathan Drouin is not going anywhere, and we know what his potential is, you have a team that you can build, a team that can contend for all the years that all those players are under contract. You can build around them. Look at Pittsburgh. Outside of Phil Kessel, name me one winger on Pittsburgh that's an elite winger. There's none of them. You know, these Connor Sheary's, who everyone says is fantastic, and Brian Rust, and these guys that we saw emerge in the last couple of years, they were players that were elevated by the players they were playing with. And Gensel. I'm not saying they're not good.
Gensel. Gensel. Like, who the hell is Gensel?
Perfect example. Yeah. Like, these guys are good players. There's no doubt about it. But Paul Byron's a good player, too. And Andrew Shaw's a good player, too. And Arturi Lehkonen is clearly going to be a very good player. But you put a player who makes them better with them, you have the potential to become that much better of a team. And that's why I say, when you look at a guy like Matt Duchene or Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, they're two guys that have the potential to make players around them better. But John Tavares does that for sure. And I think what it would cost to acquire such a player, if you were to put that kind of package together, and I know it sounds like a lot for Canadiens fans who love their players and obsess over their players, but you look at the competitive landscape of what it would be to acquire a John Tavares, what potentially a Toronto would offer or any other team in the NHL would offer, you need to blow them out of the park. And if it means giving a Max Pacioretty and an Alex Galchenyuk and two first-round draft picks, you can build around those four pieces that I mentioned: Carey Price, Shea Weber, John Tavares, and John Drouin. You have a team that has the seeds to win for multiple years in a row. So that's why I say, you know, it's hard to judge Bergevin right now. It's hard to judge where they're at. They've got $8.5 million in cap space. How they spend it is going to be a critical part of the evaluation here. And if they can pull off the biggest miracle possible, everything turns around in the evaluation of Bergevin. If he actually pulled off a deal like that, even if it meant giving up huge pieces on his team to do it, that would be a defining move after making one with Subban and Weber.
Yeah, absolutely a defining move, and one they haven't made in over 20 years. Pierre Turgeon was the last, because you can't even say it was Vincent Danfous, because in his last 2 years, lasting longer than Turgeon did here, he was already finished his career. So that's 1997. We're at 20 years now, and it needs to be done. And Eric, you sound like you have the same philosophy as I do: win the middle, win the game. So I'm thinking you think the greatest need for the team is at center. However, they did lose Andrei Markov, and I don't think anyone, no matter how positive and optimistic they are, can argue that they're better on the D-line than they were last year. I just truly do not believe, when you lose a Markov and you replace him with small pieces, that those small pieces add up to the great piece loss.
Yeah, and where we started in this conversation is that they're worse. You know, before they spend that $8.5 million, even if they have to hold on to it, they're a worse team. And you look on that blue line, Shea Weber is an excellent puck mover, but that's not the best part of his game. He's de facto the best puck mover on this team right now. Jeff Petrie is inconsistent. He plays five games great, five games you're wondering what happened to the guy that just played great for five games. So is he going to bring up the model consistency? People are talking about David Schlemko like he's going to be a star in Montreal. You know, everyone gets excited.
And no one's seen him. Let's be honest. Playing in San Jose, we barely saw the guy. Not many of us stay up until 1:30 a.m.
We know the advanced stats are favorable. We know that he has potential. We know that he still potentially has a little bit of upside, even if he's a little older. But at the same time, at his best, is he a fifth defenseman? I mean, is he a fourth defenseman? Let's not get carried away. This is not going to put the Canadians over the edge. Jacob Jerebak, complete unknown. We don't
could know. Could be a bust.
Could be
Sakic.
He signed a deal predicated on the idea that he'd be okay with going to the AHL. That doesn't sound to me like a guy who's going to jump in to the first pairing with Shea Weber. And that's where the big question comes in with this whole thing. Because I know people that are listening to this right now are going to say, well, you're forgetting about Carl Alsner. I'm not forgetting about Carl Alsner. And people have tweeted this to me when I made a tweet on Twitter that really offended people. It said, the Canadians lost Radulov and Markov and gained Hemsky and it was the defenseman, blanking.
Alsner.
No, it wasn't Alsner. It was
Jerebak, Schlemko.
Oh, damn. I shouldn't have brought it up if I was going to forget.
Well, I can't remember either.
Either way, Strait. It was Mark Strait.
Oh, Mark Strait, right.
So Hemsky and Strait and Radulov and Markov out. And everyone was like, well, you forgot about Drouin. You forgot about Alzer. No, it's a 140-character tweet. I didn't forget about these people. I cover the Montreal Canadiens for a living. Carl Alzner, Brian, I have a question for you. And, like, this is a serious question. Is Carl Alzner definitively better than what we saw from Jordy Benn last year?
No.
The whole point is, if you even have to think about it, right, even if he is better, okay, if you even have to think about it, what does that tell you about Carl Alzner?
They have the same profile, Eric. Okay. They have the exact same profile. They're puck clearers. They don't make stupid decisions. They're very smart, but they're not puck movers. They're steady, but not spectacular. I think for me to not have to think about that at all, I'd have to say that the guy was at times spectacular, too, and added to the offense. And he doesn't.
And the reaction.
And that doesn't mean I don't like him. I think it's a great signing. But he's not an offensive defenseman who brings what Markov does.
But the reaction to him getting signed is hilarious in Montreal. You know, it's everybody's so excited. He's one of the marquee defensemen on the
free
agent
market. Well, he was the second highest rank behind Shattenkirk in the free agent pool.
But you and I, we saw the value in Josh Georges when he was in Montreal. There was value in this player that nobody seemed to recognize. He was willing to block a shot with his face. He's a great team guy. He was an important player until he kind of lost it. But for a long time towards the end there, people were saying, well, this guy's useless. He wasn't useless. But now those same people are saying Carl Alzner is worth the $5 million that they're giving him. Like, let's face it. The Canadians are starting this season with the potential of Shea Weber and Carl Alzner as a defense pairing. That's not a number one defense pairing. That's not a guy who compliments Shea Weber so well. It's the same reason why people are freaking out about Alexi Emelin playing three quarters of the season next to Shea Weber. He's very dependable. He's very solid. He's even boring, which is a good thing as a defenseman. But he's not a number two, and he was not even a number six or a number seven for the Washington Capitals in the playoffs this season.
I got to say one thing, though, that I think that people are getting a little bit excited about. There is so much right now passion about the puck-carrying defenseman. The puck-carrying defenseman who makes stupid decisions all night long is useless to a hockey team. You got to be a puck-carrying defenseman who is also smart. And that's, I think, one of the reasons that these days, Eric, when you look at the average age of the NHL, the faster forward is younger and younger. The smart defenseman is older and older. Let's not ever lose sight the value of the guy who simply makes the right decision. Nathan Beaulieu is gone, not because he wasn't an excellent puck-moving defenseman, but because he cost the team too much with bad decisions. So I like Carl Alzner a little bit more than other people, just on that alone, because I like the value smart decision.
It's a really good point, and you know, everyone says it's a copycat league. Pittsburgh won the Stanley Cup 2 years in a row, not because of a puck-carrying defenseman. Sorry for the bus in the background. We're outside. It's summer. We need to be outside, people. We're always
inside.
It's all
good. It's all good.
But honestly, the puck-carrying defenseman has kind of lost its value in the NHL. But you look at the way Pittsburgh plays the game, it's move the puck as fast as possible. You look at the way Claude Julien coaches the game and Michel Therrien before him, it's move the puck as fast as possible and move it the right way. And I know a lot of people like to think those coaches are obsessed with banging the puck off the glass and winning 50-50 races with your fast forwards. Believe me, you know, I spoke to Therrien for an hour and a half in his office, and he shared with me what his philosophy was on the idea. And he said it's the last resort play to bang it off the glass, but people don't realize watching at home how much time an NHL defenseman actually has to move the puck. It's not very much. Those forwards are bearing down with great speed, and the quick decision making where they really miss a guy like Andrei Markov. You know, Jeff Petrie always said this to me. He's the easiest guy to play with because his decision is made at least 30 seconds before he gets the puck. And as easy as that sounds in principle, it's the hardest thing to do as an NHL defenseman. But getting back to your point, Brian, you know, the value of a puck-moving defenseman versus one who actually skates it out. I mean, unless you have guys who are of the very top caliber, PK Subban, Ryan Ellis, the guys that we see in Nashville being able to do that, it often leads to some bad decisions or freezing out the forwards in front of you who are waiting for you and end up having to stop at the line so you can bring the puck over. So there is a premium to that, and the Canadians do have guys who can play that kind of simplicity model. And, yeah, Pittsburgh's defense was not very good, and they won the Stanley Cup. But the forwards on Montreal are not Pittsburgh's forwards.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, nothing moves faster than the puck. All right.
to conclude, Eric, I'm gonna put you on the spot. You have that $8.5 million. What is your course of action? If you're Marc Bergevin, what are you going to do with that money? What is the number one attack process? Is it like a Ryan Nugent Hopkins and see if Edmonton's ready because they're too deep at center? Is it that hole that's Andre Markov? Or is it the patience to wait for next year's free agent class, which is the best in a very long time?
Yeah, I don't know how to answer this without saying all of the above. Say you go down the route of Ryan Nugent Hopkins. There's no reason, if you're crafty and creative, that you can't convince. Edmonton is not up against the cap right now. You know this, you're an Oilers fan. So
absolutely.
Edmonton is not up against the cap this year.
However, planning for the future is also important.
Planning for the future is essential. If you're going to move a former number one overall pick, no matter where he's at in his career and what he's produced, and become a third line center in Edmonton, the injuries, yeah, you can bring all that stuff up. At the end of the day, he's still going to fetch a considerable return. So is it a first-round pick and a prospect that you have to give up in a deal like that? Very possibly.
What about a first-round pick, and if it's 20 to 30, they only make the league 50% of the time, and they're not usually impact players, and Brendan Gallagher?
Well, no matter what it is, and I wouldn't throw Gallagher into the deal, no matter what it is,
if I'm Marc
Bergevin, I'm going to turn to them and say, here's a good prospect, here's a first-round pick, and by the way, you're taking $4 million of Thomas Plekanec. That's the way I'm working that deal. So I continue to have that advantage of having cap space, and I'm getting
right.
a center
nice.
Who makes this team better.
I like it. Good thought.
In the meantime, say you don't go down that road. Say you say, this is not the center I'm going to invest in. I like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. He's a good player, but he's injury-prone. And let's face it, his production is not where I expect it to be. And even though he was playing in a third-line role at Edmonton in the playoffs, he was playing with Jordan Eberle, and neither of them produced anything, and they're both decent players. That's a warning sign for me. I'm going to hold on to my money because Matt Duchene is not my guy either. And I think if Matt Duchene was Montreal's guy, and I could be wrong about this, it could come down to a panic move later on. If he was their guy, he'd already be in Montreal. And if I'm Marc Bergevin and I'm looking at the roster that I have right now and I'm thinking about how to make things better with the current pieces in place, I'm putting Alex Galchenyuk at center. I'm putting Jonathan Drouin at center as well. Those are my top two centers to start the year. And don't talk to me about Philip Deneau, who had 40 points and he belongs at center. He could play anywhere in the lineup if those two guys are playing center. Thomas Plekanec, he's got to be a million times better than he was last year. That's a lot to ask of him, but he's got to be considerably better, and he knows it, and so does the team. Otherwise, you know, they got to find a way to work that out, whether it means buying him out or whatever it takes. But if you want the Canadiens to be better as they're currently constructed, it starts with those two guys in the middle. And for anyone who's out there right now saying, well, Jonathan Drouin can't play center and this and that, I'm going to make a prediction right now. Jonathan Drouin is starting the year at center with Max Pacioretty. He is on that line. That is going to happen unless some dramatic moves are taking place with that $8.5 million in space. Jonathan Drouin is playing center on this team to start the year with Max Pacioretty next to him. And I'll tell you, personally, I've had conversations with Jonathan. He's kind of well aware of what the expectations are, and they have to use the company line and say, I'll play wherever the coach is going to put me, and the coach is going to say, well, you know, we don't want to put that pressure on him. We'll see how he develops. We'll see if he looks good there. The plan in acquiring this player is to try him there, and I believe, personally, and I believe this is going to be proven, he has the ability to make players around him better. His talent, the way he thinks the game, is exceptional. Whether or not he can play in his own zone is something Julien is going to have to figure out with him. I think he's a very smart player, and they will figure it out, and he's going to thrive at that position. And if they have those two guys, him and Galchenyuk, who I think, you know, no matter what I believe about Galchenyuk, because he's had his struggles in Montreal, and I really, you know, think a lot of that is on him, even though the fan base wants to put that on the Canadians. I think Galchenyuk is going to have a major rebound season this year. I think he's going to be very good no matter what happens, no matter where he plays. So if I put those two guys in the middle and nothing changes, that's a chance for the team to be better than they look on paper.
Yeah, I agree with both of those assessments. Drouin at center is going to happen, and I think he has the ability. You look at that last year in Halifax, Nick Ehlers, he made look pretty good there. And I agree with Galchenyuk having a bounce-back season at center as well, at least getting a chance. And then they're way better down the middle than anybody could guess. So, he had 103 points last year. Let's conclude with a prediction for this year. I'm going to go first. I think at their present state of $8.5 million cap not used, no additional players added with that money, 96 points. I think Markov is worth 6-7 points on the downward. And Drouin and Radulov are about even, with Drouin a little bit better, with Gusts up to a lot better, but not proven yet. Going to put him at 97 points.
Yeah, it seems about right, 96, 97 points. It could be as low as 94, and it could be as high as 99. And I really think it comes down to a couple of things. Are they going to be able to move the puck? You could talk about how Lehkonen's going to be a better player and Galchenyuk's going to be a better player and Drouin is going to be on par with what Radulov provided last year. But Paul Byron is not going to shoot at 24%. And Philip Deneau, who still has upside in his game, that upside might turn into him being a better two-way player than it does being a better offensive threat. There's a lot of questions on this team. And to argue that they're better or capable of doing exactly what they did last year, I think, is far-fetched. And we're going to see what gets done with that money. That's the ultimate question. And that's why, I've stayed away from writing any columns right now about a general theme on where the Canadians are going, because I really want to give Mark Bergevin a chance, because so far I think it's been a pretty lousy summer for him.
Yeah, you know what though? That $8.5 million to spend, still a lot better than Ken Holland in Detroit, who's $4 million over it and already has a crappy team.
It's a big deal, Brian. The only thing I'll say about that one thing, look at what Arizona was able to do with having that value of cap space over the summer. Look at the moves that they pulled off. It's the opportunity to fleece another GM. There's no question about that. Will Bergevin be able to be the guy that does that? Because so far in his career and his tenure, what we've learned about him is he's an incredible bargain shopper. He acquires players that produce more than you would have ever expected them to. But when it comes to the big move, we haven't seen it yet. So,
well, we've had the Weber move, it's big. We've had the Drouin move, it's big. But the generational move, the centerman, hasn't happened.
Yeah. So let's see if he makes it happen.
All right, let's see if he makes it happen. Thanks very much, Eric. Appreciate your time today.
My pleasure. Good luck with recruits.
Thank you very much. Habs 365 continues after this. You enjoyed the first Habs 365 podcast. It certainly was a joy bringing it to you. I want to conclude with just a little appeal for support. Before I begin, I want to tell you I won't always be appealing for support. I know that can become extremely boring over time. But as we get started here in mid-August and push our way to the start of the season, our first Habs 365 campaign, I wanted to just make a quick appeal, and because I know in the end this isn't about money. Some people will say it is, and they'll say that they don't have enough, but it's just how you allocate, because I know that there is enough money in the Montreal Canadiens. People will spend $400 for a ticket. People will spend $300 on an authentic jersey. People will spend $100 on a cheaper jersey that's not authentic. And they'll go to the game and they'll spend $15 on a beer. And then they'll spend another $15 on a beer, knowing that that beer is available in their grocery for about $2. They'll spend a lot on popcorn. They'll spend a lot on parking. So I know the money is there. And it's all about attitude. It's all about changing attitudes when you think about getting information and actually paying for it. It seems like a funny thing, doesn't it? But in the end, you've always been paying. You've always subscribed to TSN as a part of your cable package. You maybe had the newspaper back in the day, which was $30 a month. I used to subscribe to both La Presse and the Gazette, $60 a month, just to get some information. This is 8 cents a day. When you buy a latte at Starbucks or Second Cup, that's about $4. And somebody made that cup of coffee for you for about 2.5 minutes, and you give them $1 too. So it's not about money, because you spend it on the Canadians. It's not about money in comparison to what a Starbucks latte costs. It's just an attitude thing. And that's what we're up against. Grant McCagg said it really well to me when we were thinking, is this going to be successful? Are people going to believe in this project? Will they actually put $1 or $2 towards it for the passing on of information from people that have it, have access to it? He said, I thought it was pretty wise, a lot of years we knew that putting on a seatbelt was the right thing to do. And a lot of years we didn't put on a seatbelt. And a lot of people died not putting on a seatbelt. And so that's what we're up against here. We believe in this project. And we really, really want to give it back to you when this project takes off. We want to hire writers, freelancers. We've already hired an IT guy and a video guy. And we want to pay everybody that comes on board. If we hire a freelance writer, we're going to make sure he gets money in his pocket. We want to be the part of something new and exciting and a changing world. We want to be the first go-to Montreal Canadian source. We want to be the place that your attitude changes about what this is worth. You would never tell your dentist that you're going to fix this tooth for free. You would never get out of the cab after a cab ride and say, you know what, that one's on you. We're hoping you find some value in this. We believe there's value in this. And we want you to join us. And we thank you for joining us on the first Habs 365 podcast. We'll make another one as soon as there's any information out there to talk about. And we will talk to you then.
Yeah, the inside jukebox goes out just like thunder. And every...